Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. And as always, we are wishing you the best. And hopefully, you listen to Natural Alternatives all the time. We're so happy to have you on board right here as the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And you can listen to the show live every Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m., or on the archives, and they're there 24/7. We have loads of archive downloaders, close to about 300,000, I believe. So we're so happy that you're on board with us. We have lots and lots of classes going on every day. If you go to naturalnurse.com and then calendar, you will see them. In fact, this very afternoon, if you're listening to the show live on May 7th, we have a webinar tonight, and it's totally free, and it is about hemp, THC, CBD, endocannabinoids, what's the buzz? And that, by the way, is a free webinar that you can join in on. And if you're listening to our show here another day and that has already played, it's available also, the entire webinar, as an archive. So you can get in touch with me for help finding it if you'd like. And that would be at naturalnurse.com through contact. You can always get in touch with myself or Dr. Eugene Samperone by doing that. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest, Diane Budd. Diane is a sought-after animal communicator and healer, serving to bridge the gap in understanding between animals and their human companions. Her book is Energy Medicine for Animals, and it investigates bioenergetics of animal healing. Boy, lots of vocabulary words there for us to get into. She completed zoo pharmacognosy through the Ingram Academy in the UK, and she teaches workshops on animal communication, animal healing, and zoo pharmacognosy. She does offer private consultations, and so we are so happy to be on our show today with Diane Budd. Hi, Diane, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks, and you?
I'm great. Now, I know you're far away from us. Where are you calling in from?
From Cape Town, South Africa.
From South Africa. Now, isn't this an amazing world that I can hear you like you're in the next room? It's just phenomenal, and you're coming in loud and clear. Now, all the way over there, just like here, people love animals. What do you think that bond is about?
Personally, I think that bond is about enriching the soul. I think that we're all here for very definite reasons. And one of those reasons is love. And very often people find it so difficult to accept themselves for who and what they are. You know, we don't choose the type of body that we get born into. We don't choose our genetics, and we don't choose our background. We kind of like just get stuck here. And I think one thing that animals can teach us is about love, and it's accepting not only ourselves, but as others through that connection. And it just makes things, it takes everything to the very next level when you understand that.
So when you say we just get stuck here, I don't know, this is not really your main topic, but just since it led me to this question, you know, in various traditions, spiritual traditions, and I know you are spiritual, so you're probably familiar with this, there are different beliefs in different spiritual traditions in terms of reincarnation and if animal souls, if people can come back as animals or vice versa. Do you have any feeling about that?
I do, and it's quite a complicated. I'll explain it briefly. Part of my training was I studied metaphysics. Now, metaphysics is psychology of the soul. It's also understanding the universe and how we all came to be here. And one of the ways that we were taught is that you cannot, as a person, go back to being an animal. you can only, as a person, when you pass over, you can either reincarnate and come back as another human, or you can become a guide, or you can go on to the angelic realm. So there's several stages of development that the soul must go through, but you can never go back. So the understanding is that you get born as a mineral, as a rock or a stone or a piece of wood, and then you become, then you evolve into the plant kingdom. After that, you go into the animal pool, and when you've integrated and you've learned all the lessons that you can, then you become a human. And each of these levels has a certain consciousness. So we all start at the bottom. We've all been murderers and we've all done horrible deeds. And one of my deeds is that I abused animals. And that's why I'm here, is to try and correct that karma. And it was incredibly difficult for me to hear that when I originally heard that. It really sat with me, and I had to really work through all the emotions of doing that. But once I accepted it, I kind of like moved to the next level. So that is my belief. And if anybody wants to Google it, it's called the Antikarana 1 and Antikarana 2. So we have universal laws, and those universal laws theoretically apply to soul evolution as well.
Well, thank you for explaining that. Yeah, I have heard that also. And then I've also heard other philosophical discussions about, and so probably it's like, who knows what goes on. But nonetheless, we are certainly intimately connected to animals. And I'll tell you, one of the things I teach, and you are very involved with, is interspecies communication. And what we have recently discovered is that it is not just telepathic, and it is not just energetic. As a matter of fact, there are actually receptor sites on our cells, and the receptor sites are specific in terms of interspecies communication, which has to do with same species communicating with each other, and there are different receptor sites for intra-species communication and inter-species. So when a species is conversing with a different species, there's actually different receptor sites on the cell membrane for that, which is quite incredible, because I'm sure everyone who has had a pet animal, like a dog or a cat, definitely thinks that the animal is understanding them and that they are understanding the animal. And, you know, you yourself feel that you have an ability to talk to animals. How does that feel to you when it's happening?
I have to agree with what you're saying, because over the years, when I pick up a conversation between two animals, it's different from a conversation that I hold with the animal. And sometimes it takes them, I would say, a little bit of a while to settle down. They're far more confident and outgoing with another member of the family, whether it be canine, feline, or mouse, or whatever it is. So with me, it's like they have to think first and redefine their language and how they put things across. So yes, I definitely agree with it. And, you know, it's fascinating doing this work every single day, because no two days are the same. Every single day I'm learning something new, and every single day I'm growing. For instance, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon here, and this morning I read a client's cats, and the cat showed me that she actually selected the client at one of the rescue centers, but the way that she said it was quite incredible. So cats have the ability to zoom in and really set their focus on something, for instance, like when they hunt. But I didn't quite realize they do it with us humans as well. And she explained something to me of extending, so almost like a Spider-Man catch. You know, when Spider-Man opens up his palm of his hand and he extends that ethereal web and he links onto something and then he climbs up. That is exactly what she did to her owner, and she was pretty proud of it. And the owner could definitely feel something that, you know, when she was at the rescue center, and she was drawn to this one cat but none of the others. So it was nice hearing from a cat her definition of that connectivity to her owner.
Yes, And I think pretty much every pet owner, I think it's a common experience. Do you agree that they feel like there is a communication pattern open between themselves and their pets?
Yes, I do. And people, the one thing I would like to encourage everybody to do, don't just think that you're imagining it. Play around with it. Have fun, you know. Imagine that you're going to, if you own a dog, go to the cupboard and take out a lead and take the dog for a walk and see if the dog responds. Or say that there's a biscuit and the biscuit is sitting on top of the table and all they've got to do is reach out and get it. It brings your relationship to a whole new different level. But people shouldn't discount it because it is happening and it is very valid. Very often I do a session and the owner says to me, wow, so everything I thought I was getting was actually true. And I actually am speaking to the animal. Yes, you are. And the animal's speaking back to you in turn. It's just that I go to the gym every day and I exercise this part of my brain more.
Right, exactly. That's a really, really good point, Diane. And I want to remind our listeners, we are listening today here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z with author Diane Budd, and we're talking about her beautiful book, Energy Medicine for Animals, The Bioenergetics of Animal Healing. So besides communicating, let's define some of these things that you focus on in your book. What are bioenergetics?
Bioenergetics is basically the summary of what it does. It defines energy and connecting to different species.
So you mean like that can go on between two humans as well as a human and an animal friend?
Correct.
And so that's what you feel, what your definition of bioenergetics is. Now, in terms of animal healing, we were just talking in our previous examples, like when you're saying, think about going to get the leash, right? Yes. I have done this, by the way. The dog will go over and sniff where he knows the leash is, in the closet or wherever you keep it. It's amazing. So that's not necessarily healing. So communicating can go in different feels other than for healing.
Definitely. I mean, you get people who specialize in tracking. They find lost animals. I do a lot of work with horses where the horse tells me how the rider is sitting, how the reins are being held, how the bit feels in its mouth, how if the hips are being moved, how the horse would like certain things changed in order to be able to function better. And then you've got, I did a session the other day with a Arab who does Western style. Now, Western style is a very, you do obstacles and stuff like this. And one of the obstacles is they put a wine barrel and the horse felt that the owner was going too sharp around the wine barrel. So the corners she was uncertain about and it was causing a certain amount of issues. And the horse suggested placing one or two cones further away from a wine barrel and just keeping it in. And straight after the session, the owner got on and the horse immediately showed her what they wanted to do. And they were able to shave off some valuable time off, when they go out to compete. So it's not just about every day, how do you feel about supper? What would you like for supper tonight? That's what one of the main things that you can ask. You can give them a menu. You can, as I said, with horses, it's a different type of information. I sometimes work with reptiles. Reptiles come across as very sexual, especially the males, not the females. So there's so much that we can learn to understand when we communicate. It's not just an everyday thing. It can deepen the relationship so much.
That's really interesting what you just said about reptiles, because I love reptiles. I've owned many, many reptiles. When I say I've owned them, they've kind of owned me, I think. But presently, I live in Florida, and surrounding my house are iguanas, because the iguanas are invasive in Florida. They didn't used to live here 30 years ago, but now they're all over the place. So I have some very large male iguanas, I mean 5 feet. And when they see me, they come over and they inflate this big giant orange dewlap under their neck. And they're definitely preeming, you know, like, whoa, I'm a really hot dude here. You know, it's
that's really funny. That's fantastic. And the one thing sometimes we forget is animals are very much aware of our sex, what we are. Are we female? Are we male? And how we project that to somebody else. So, yes, you know, reptiles, the males are all about sex. They go from one female to another. And then when, as soon as the female gets pregnant, she's like, bugger off and leave me alone. And all she wants to do is have food then. And then it's the different types of food that gets offered. So it's a fascinating topic.
Yeah, it really is. And of course, most people are definitely familiar with what we'll call companion animals. Correct. So probably dogs and cats. But what about something like a rabbit?
Rabbits, definitely a rabbit. It's become quite popular here in Cape Town that people don't own a cat or a dog. They own rabbits. So funny enough, I did a rabbit this morning, and it was quite a cheeky dominant rabbit.
I want to tell our listeners, I did not know that. That was not a setup, but how interesting.
Yeah, so, you know, they all have their own personalities. So, yeah, we've got unfortunately, a bit of a population explosion in Cape Town with regards to rabbits. But a lot of people have now domesticated rabbits in their houses. And it's really made a change. And I think they're a lot easier sometimes to watch over than your normal cats or dogs. So it's really gaining in popularity.
Why do you think?
I'm not quite sure, because a rabbit isn't very affectionate. Some of them are, especially when they're younger, but when they get older, they're quite firm with boundaries, and they can be quite stroppy, and they can be very territorial. I think possibly it could be a fashion, or people just want something different, and a bunny is a lot easier to look after.
Okay. So that's one thing, because, you know, you don't have to stay home with them and make sure there's a babysitter, like with a dog, to take them out to walk and all those kinds of things. But let's go back in time a little bit, Diane, because how and when did this interest, or did you recognize that you have a special gift for animal communication?
No, I didn't. You know, when I first, I think my path began when, just after the birth of my second son, and I went to see, a medium or a psychic. And some of the information that she brought through was absolutely incredible. And I think that just opened a whole new pathway for me, that I went back to the library and read everything that I could possibly find on anything esoteric. From Sylvia Brown would be one of them. I think I read each and every single one of her books. I did Madame Blavatsky, John Edwards. It was just anything. And that's why I decided to study more. And one day I was paging through Odyssey magazine. It's an esoteric magazine that we have here. And I saw an advert for an animal communication workshop. And it was like, no, that's absolutely impossible. But it interested me enough, because at the time I had animals myself, that I decided to sign up for the course, and I did the course. And I've really never looked back, because it was so intriguing. And I think I was very fortunate enough, because the more you meditate, the more you grow, on a spiritual basis, and the more accepting you become of things like this. So when I started getting information, you know, I'm quite an introverted person. I didn't make a lot of noise about it. But one night I couldn't sleep, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. And I decided, okay, I'm going to practice. And I connected to my then cross German Shepherd Rottweiler. and she was sleeping in another room in the house, and I woke her up and she started barking at me. But you know, the dogs sometimes have this absolute cross, no nonsense bark. And that was her. And she was moaning at me for waking her up, and how dare I, and where are my manners, and et cetera, and et cetera. And of course, I've never really, that was such a wake up of a validation of what I was doing. And of course, I immediately apologized, and then I withdrew. But then, of course, I couldn't sleep for the rest of the night. But it just served as I can do this, and it's very valid. And then I've just never looked back from then.
So, you know, you felt that, wow, this is a gift that I have. And so you had that. And when did you decide to start to share it with others? And even has it, it's interesting, as something that you do professionally.
It took quite a couple of years. I started practicing, I think, about 2 or 3 years after that. And it's all on referral basis. And then I sometimes felt that I wasn't doing, that talking wasn't enough, that I could hear and I could understand, but there were certain things that I couldn't help move to the next level. And one of the, an example I'll use is aggression in dogs. So sometimes a dog is aggressive and they can't help themselves. So it doesn't matter how much the dog says to you, I'm aggressive because I don't like this, this, and this, and you tell the owner and negotiate between the two of them, it wasn't enough. And that's when I went through different things. I went through Bach flower remedies, I went through tissue salts, and that's when I came across zoopharmacognosy, and that's when I went to study with Caroline Ingram, simply because I felt that as a healer, that can promote me to the next level. Yes, I do energy healing, and energy healing definitely works. But as a nice backup and as a nice validation, essential oils, I wouldn't say are the quick fix, but they definitely help when there's a behavioral problem. And when it how it helps me is that when I'm in session, I feel emotions that the animal is experiencing, and I feel pain that the animal is experiencing. So as soon as I pick something up, I can then work with it and try and move it out of the auric field and move the healing to another level. Whereas beforehand, I felt that I wasn't doing it. And this really forced me out of my shell, because beforehand, I was home-based, working from home. And now I've got these oils and I've got these plant extracts. Now I'm forced to go, work with animals and not only do a session, but have the oils as backup. That it was never intended for me to work like this. The oils were just a backup. And it was something that I was so interested in doing because it's a very studied field. So we know that vetiver contains something called cusamol. Cusamol helps mild aggression in the brain. And you basically pop the lid, let the animal smell it, and work with a couple of other oils to support it. And there really is a remarkable difference. So that is why now it's so much easier for me when I read to recommend certain oils, because I know how to help those emotions to be processed to the next level.
So that's a lot of sharing, and thank you so much. We're going to go to a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. You can always find us as naturalnurse.com. We're talking today to author Diane Budd and about animal communication stories and her book, Energy Medicine for Animals, The Bioenergetics of Animal Healing. We will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss Sar sarsaparilla or Smilax officinalis.
Sar sarsaparilla is a tropical plant which grows in South America, Mexico, and Guatemala. Although most Americans are familiar with it as a flavor enhancer for root beer, it has also been used for its beneficial properties for hundreds of years by many different cultures. In Roman times, the young shoots were eaten, and the mature vines were worn as garlands at festivals of Bacchus. According to ancient Roman writings, sarsaparilla originated when the beautiful maiden, Smilax, was turned into a shrub after her love was slighted by the young crocus.
Sarsaparilla was brought to Europe in the 16th century by Spanish traders. A French physician, Nicolas Monardus, published a comprehensive account of sarsaparilla as a treatment for syphilis in 1574. During Portuguese military operations in 1812, a British inspector general of hospitals noted its positive effect on syphilis patients. It has also been used in China for treatment of the same condition. Sarsaparilla was included in the United States Pharmacopoeia until 1950 as a recommended treatment of secondary syphilis.
Sarsaparilla's medicinal action appears to be a result of binding bacterial endotoxins in the gut, thereby decreasing their absorption. This greatly reduces the stress on the liver and is likely responsible for its historic use as a tonic and blood purifier.
In a controlled study of 92 patients published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 1942, a chemically active component of sarsaparilla called sarsaponin greatly improved psoriasis in 62% of the patients and resulted in complete clearance in 18%. Sarsaparilla is often recommended by naturopathic physicians for gout, arthritis, and psoriasis. Another folkloric use for sarsaparilla is as a tonic for male sexual potency.
So, if you want a root beer flavored tea with a long history as a healthy tonic, reach for the sarsaparilla in your natural medicine chest.
Once again, two more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We'd love to hear from you. Go to naturalnurse.com and you can always just go ahead and hit contact. You can also join our newsletter. There is no charge and we ask for no information whatsoever. You just go to the left-hand corner of the front page, click on where you join the newsletter, and all we ask you for is your email, nothing else. And you can easily say, don't send it anymore if you're getting too many emails and you'd rather not. We only send out a newsletter, sometimes once a month, sometimes twice a month. We have links to how you can sign up for classes, and you can always find that out by just going to naturalnurse.com and then move the cursor on the top to calendar, and you'll have a drop-down menu of all our events. We have online events such as the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification Class, which offers 18 CEU credits for nurses, midwives, massage therapists, acupuncturists, registered dietitians, and nutritionists. So that's a great thing to join in on if you're thinking you'd like to learn more about herbal medicine to use for yourself and your family, or if you're interested in moving forward with a professional life linked to natural medicine. We have another class called Career Paths in Natural Health that really details all the specific career paths you might be interested in pursuing. We have a group class on that, and we have individual sessions as well where I actually look at your resume and CV and what you've been doing with your life up to this point, and then I get you absolutely very specific individualized links to what you can look into. And we investigate things like how long would it take to get capable of performing in this particular kind of genre, let's say a massage therapist, or let's say a holistic health counselor, or let's say an animal communicator. How would you become that? You know, it's got to be a gift involved with that one as well. And all those things are available at naturalnurse.com. Look at calendar and send us an email. Now, today, our guest is Diane Budd, and she is a sought-after animal communicator and healer, serving to bridge the gap in understanding between animals and their human companions. That's interesting. Usually it's humans and their animal companions. So her book, Energy Medicine for Animals, investigates bioenergetics of animal healing. She completed zoo pharmacognosy through the Ingram Academy and teaches workshops in animal communication, animal healing, and zoo pharmacognosy, and she offers private consultations. Now, Diane, since you're very far away, I'd like to ask you if you offer private consultations via something like Zoom or like Skype that we're on today, because of course nobody's running over to your office there from, you know, from New York, I don't think, or from anywhere in the U.S.
Yes, I've got clients all over the world. So
I would imagine you do.
Everything just gets done via email.
Right. And then, of course, you can always look at the animal. Now, how do you talk about this word? Because I never heard this before, and I love to learn more as well. What is zoo pharmacognosy?
Zoo pharmacognosy is animal self-selecting medicinal plant extracts. So what happens is when an animal gets ill, and this in a way pertains to us as well, the receptors in the mouth change and then they graze something that they wouldn't normally eat. So for instance, let's say there's a buck out in the field and the buck has worms. It will tentatively select on different types of vegetation until it will find something that will help it to get those worms out of the body, all right? That is called self-selection, and we call that a secondary plant extract. So you get your primary food that is full of carbohydrates, calories, proteins, etc. Those are the things that taste nice. But your more medicinal plant extracts, something like devil's claw, rose hips, fenugreek, spirulina, all those kind of things have a bitter compound. Some of them are extremely bitter. So the animal will self-select until optimum level has been reached and they're feeling a little bit better. And then they basically walk away and say, thank you, I'm fine. And how this has come about is that due to domestication, animals don't really have the ability to roam and to self-select as they previously did. So we're trying to bring back animals and the ability to help heal themselves.
You know, that's interesting because in many of the slide presentations that I do in terms of interspecies communication, one of the things we look at is something called dowsing, where animals are choosing plants to eat, just what you're talking about. But a lot of the examples I have seen are with wild animals, like, for instance, a chimpanzee who will only eat a certain tree, which they don't like, but they will use it because of, you know, if they have an infection, and then when we analyze it, we find this plant has bitter, so that's probably why they don't like it, yet it's high in antibiotic and antimicrobial principles.
Exactly. I hear what you're saying, but dogs and cats do that regularly all the time, and so do horses. So sometimes it's very interesting if I arrive at a house and I notice that, for instance, in one particular area, which is very close to the beach in Nurtuk, they've got a tree, and this tree gets harvested by all the animals that come into contact with it. I'd say at the beginning of every spring. So if I arrive and it's springtime, I noticed exactly what's going on. And it's a form of a eucalyptus tree. Now, the difficult part is understanding what constituent is in that bark, and this is specifically the bark, in order to make, to find the property that the animal is selecting it at that specific time of the year. And it's incredibly difficult. We know that science has identified things like, if you look at the willow tree, they've identified that when animals eat the bark of the willow tree, they're actually drawing out salicine. They've identified salicine, they've put it into a tablet, and lo and behold, we get aspirin. Now, where this differs from conventional medicine or synthetic medicine is that when an animal selects a certain type of plant extracts, they're having the whole plant. So they don't get stomach bleeds from having too much aspirin. And that's the difference.
That's actually true for humans as well, because it's quite amazing. You know, of course, I've written 15 books on herbal medicine, but not for animals. That's white willow bark contains the mulsans, which are very soothing to the gastrointestinal tract, while it also contains the active salicylate, which is similar to what it has in aspirin. But like you're saying, when you're looking at that whole plant compound, you often decrease adverse effects, both for animals and humans.
Correct. So, yes, so it just depends. And very often, I don't know why they're selecting a certain type of plant. So the human will say to me, my dog's been eating this. Is it poisonous? And it's not poisonous. One of the plants that we have here is Cape honeysuckle, Tachoma capensis. And I really had to try and do a lot of research and to try and understand why certain dogs are selecting Tachoma capensis, and it's another thing, it's a painkiller. So if they don't have a willow tree, they're selecting Cape honeysuckle as a painkiller. So animals, if allowed, will select what we have.
Okay,
which is a nice way to encourage people to garden.
Yes, but what about, I know that house cats will often eat plants that you bring in a house. An example is Easter lilies, that actually is quite toxic to them.
Yes,
so how do we deal with that?
Well, the obvious, don't bring it into the house. And number two is sometimes they don't always realize what they're doing. So when they chew in the beginning, they chew slowly and it tastes nice at first, and then the chemical compounds change, and then they realize it's slightly toxic. Now, you know, things like Benadryl, and sometimes we need a toxic compound to expel something out of the system. But it is an ongoing field of research, and we're not quite sure why animals sometimes select things that can lead to toxicity and to finally, unfortunately, the passing of the animal.
Right. Well, God forbid, we don't want that. But, you know, a common one, I have actually heard of two that are very common. One is tea tree oil, particularly with cats, where someone might use it as a skin infection healer, which it's great for on humans, and yet highly toxic for cats, and then they'll lick it off themselves because they don't like it being there. And the other one is the sweetener xylitol, which is being used so widely in the industry, for instance, in gum. And dogs, when they find a pack of gum, they don't take out one little piece. They eat the whole pack. And they're really actually getting liver damage.
Correct. And one thing I'd like to say, you know, I'm very worried about tea tree being overused. Tea tree is not a common selection with any animal. And when you offer an essential oil, be very aware of what you're offering. Because if that animal has got any past history of hemorrhaging, tea tree is the last thing that you should be offering. Also, cats don't have the digestive process enzymes to digest essential oils. They can benefit from inhaling them, but under no circumstances must any essential oil be applied directly to the skin unless you know exactly what you're doing. I don't even do that because the risk is just far too great. And with regards to xylitol, you know, we're finding that xylitol is now even in peanut butter. And I don't know about you guys, but over here, when you buy peanut butter now, we have different grades. So we've got the red one, which has xylitol or sugar, and we've got the yellow one, which means that there's absolutely no sugar so that it's safe for dogs to have because it's led to so much toxicity. But xylitol, if you look at it, it actually looks like crystals, and it's very manufactured. And a lot of people take xylitol, well, you know, to help them with the movement so that they don't have to, it's like a natural, what's the word?
Like a laxative?
Yes, like a laxative. So unfortunately, it's gained in popularity even here.
Right. And then, of course, it's made out of different things like birch, which is not as bad, but most xylitol on the market now in the U.S. is actually extracted from genetically modified corn, which has, you know, its own big problems. But be that as it may, I'd like to ask you more about some very specific content that you spoke about. What is high sense perception, HSP? What does that reveal about the relationship between an animal and a human?
Well, the high sense perception is where you can see inside the body. So I use high sense perception quite often if I do a body scan on the animal. It's almost, I suppose it's what you could call a little bit of x-ray vision. I don't always see it. Sometimes I see stuff that's past and I see stuff that's present. And then I ask them if they want to be helped with that. So, for instance, the other day I did a horse who had the top of the hip bone had been dislocated. A piece had come off because it had had it up, and then unfortunately it fell down, and that was almost like floating around. So I was just very aware of this piece of bone floating around, and it wasn't causing any distress. It was just there, and the horse thought it was very funny because it just made him different from everybody, and he kind of liked that, so he was bragging a bit. So that is high sense perception, when you can either see inside the body and become aware of something that is wrong, or you can feel it on your own body.
So it's something that's, not anyone can do this, or can they? Can anyone do this? I know in your book, and one of the reasons to get your book, Energy Medicine for Animals, The Bioenergetics of Animal Healing, is that you have beautiful full-color illustrations, not just about what you do, but sort of teaching people how to try some of these techniques for themselves.
Yes, that was the whole point. I'm a gardener, and secondly, I like pictures. And one of the reasons why I wrote the book is because I couldn't find the information that I was looking for. And that led me to writing the book, because I think that it helps to see pictures of everything. And it definitely makes things easier for somebody who has a bit of healing background to understand and then take things further.
So the full pictures should have. Now, is there any kind of danger, like if somebody were to try this, let's say, with their dog, and like they go, I don't know, that's a little too new agey for me, I don't see colors, but is there any danger to try it?
There's no danger to try. All that you can do is have a good laugh at yourself if you don't succeed. And I think sometimes, if you know what you're doing, you can. There comes a level of responsibility with that, and we all have that gift in order to heal, but some of us are more switched on than the others. So if you are somebody who knows what you're doing, you can do harm, but you can also do a fair amount of good. And I don't think that any person who is a healer would deliberately do harm unless it's for a very bad purpose. So anybody can do it. Anybody can train to do it. And I think we all have the power to do it, because just remember, as we all know, energy follows thought. And when your intentions are good, we all reap the rewards.
That's true. That's true. And so, you know, it's just like prayer in that sense, that you're not really going to do any harm if you pray incorrectly. So if you're not able to actually look into high sense perception, about the relationship between an animal and a human, you can just be sending love. And I think almost everyone who has an animal really can upgrade their relationship with it and with their human companions as well by delving into a more intimate degree of communication.
Correct. I agree with you, because it does.
Now, I never heard of this particular teacher who you studied with, and that's where you studied zoo pharmacognosy. Yes. What is that something that's written about as well?
Yes, I first heard about it. I don't know if you know the Anastasia books that came out several years ago.
Yes, I did. They also had this special wood that you wear, something like that, from a cedar tree.
That's correct. Okay.
Yeah.
When I first read about this was in, I think it was about book 4, 5, or 6 of the Anastasia books, is where she describes is her grandmother owned 2 horses, and one of the horses got ill, and what they did is they went out into the forest for about a week after that, and she let the horse just graze and graze and graze. And then she started picking what the horse wanted, and they went back home, and she continued offering herbs to the horse. And the illness improved, and the horse, lived after that. And I remember closing that book, and that made such an impression on me, and I thought, that's exactly what I want to do. If I can bring herbs to animals, that's it. And then several years later, I was at an airport and I picked up Elizabeth White's book called The Animal Healer. And in it, she worked with essential oils and stuff, and almost similar to what I do. And she mentioned that she studied zoo pharmacognosy through Caroline Ingram. And Caroline is based in the UK. She teaches this, and it's a wonderful thing to do. She also started off as an aromatherapist, and it's written a book, teaches, lectures. So, yes, that's how it came about.
Okay, well, we are going to go to another break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, so you can learn more about Progressive Radio Network, how you can donate to help all the wonderful work they do here, and other wonderful shows that you can listen to anytime right here on Progressive Radio Network. We'll be right back with more.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Gary Knoll, the founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, will give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right, thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Stay tuned to PRN.fm for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We love to hear from you, so get in touch. Go to naturalnurse.com. And you can click on calendar if you'd like to see all the classes and workshops. We have some that are on ground as well. For instance, we meet up in Chinatown and we spend the day. It's like going to a different country. This is our 40th year of doing that. And we learn about traditional Chinese medicine. We visit apothecaries and we even do a trip to a Chinese museum as well as an underground FDA approved traditional Chinese medicine apothecary. So very interesting. You won't get to do that any other way than joining us on our Natural Alternatives Chinatown trip. We also have several herb classes coming up real soon where we go outside, gather wild edible and medicinal plants, and you will make your own medicine and go home with them. That includes an herbal tincture, an herbal tea, an herbal salve, and we make those all right in the class after we gather the plants. And then you get to take them home with you. That will be at Restoration Farm in Old Bethpage, Long Island, coming up in June. We are taking registrants right now, and that class fills up fast. So you can find that at naturalnurse.com calendar, along with all our other seminars and webinars. In fact, I just heard that our webinar tonight is actually on filled. So you still can register possibly, but that's pretty filled. So all of those things are available. Just check it out. Today we have as our guest Diane Budd, and we're talking about her new book, Energy Medicine for Animals, The Bioenergetics of Animal Healing. And so back to you, Diane Budd. Let's talk about a few cases. When you talk about healing, do you mean an animal had an illness and was then cured? Or is it sometimes they're going to pass away because they're elderly, but they can just do so in a more peaceful way?
Yes, it's both. I think the first one is always it's never easy for the owner to sometimes let go of the animal, and they want to do everything that they possibly can, especially towards the end. So sometimes the animals can give us a date. They can say they'd like to be assisted, or they can say, I think I've got this covered, you know, just be there to support me. And then obviously with something like that, I would just work with several of the oils just to help the owner and to help the animal come to terms with the loss and the grief, certainly that the owner will be feeling afterwards, and it just helps the soul to transcend. Sorry, I've lost my train of thought here.
Well, just basically those two things. You said you could help with both of those things.
Oh, yes.
Either
then,
physical healing or, let's say, spiritual healing. Because I know I work a lot with humans, also in hospice, and we talk about the fact that healing does not always mean you're going to get rid of the illness, but it's about if it is meant to be, you know, it's more like God's will, you still can smooth that transition. That's a form of healing.
Definitely. And I think it's just a coping mechanism. And one thing I have found is that it empowers somebody to help themselves and to help the animals, because very often people don't know what they can do to help. And sometimes it's just a small suggestion or a small way that we can improve their lives to the end. I find that when people book me, they book me for a variety of different reasons. Sometimes they're just interested and they want to hear what the animal says. Sometimes they're not even aware that there's something wrong with the animal. When I do a body scan, I very often pick up, for instance, you know, there was something wrong with a cat's jaw, and I asked the owner to immediately take it to the vet because there was a piece of bone stuck in the teeth. So we do a tooth scan. So there's a variety of reasons in which healing can take place. It's not only spiritual, it's physical. And then obviously with the animals also have auras, and things sit in the mental and they sit in the emotional part of the aura. And we just try and help to move things along so that the animal can just help soul evolution and let go of certain things. And I think that's the best part of my job is, you know, when we all have stuck, trapped emotions that we can't always let go of. And this really helps and facilitates that process.
So let's talk about one time, because guess what? We're getting to the end. But share quickly a case of physical healing that you feel, you know, that working with you helped on that level.
There's several. I did a horse at a yard the other day, high temperature, didn't know quite what was wrong, and it was a bacterial infection in the stomach. And the reason why I know that is, number one, he selected peppermint oil to help bring his temperature down. Number two, he selected thyme. Thyme is very often selected. And number three, I felt it in my stomach and I was able to help him. Yes, and this, you know, I left the owner with one or two oils, and after that, everything was absolutely fine. And then you often get it on a physical level when you send healing, and there's just a calmness and there's an understanding that happens between the owner and the animal. So, yeah, it depends what you do.
But, you know, I'm sure people are very grateful for your intervention because I'm sure it calms them down as well as the animal.
Yes, and again, sometimes people think that they don't know how to help the animal, and there are various suggestions. So I think when you say to somebody, try doing this, or just place your hand here, or just send some energy over here and let him smell this, it gives them something to do and it gives them something to work with. They don't just stand on the sidelines and they feel, I can't do anything. All I can do is stand and watch my animal. And I think that's what really makes the difference. And with helping the animal, they also help themselves because it's a twofold thing. We can't heal somebody else without tangibly healing ourselves. And that's what bioenergetic healing is.
Yes, it's certainly a back and forth between yourself and your companion animal or even a wild animal outside that, you know, you feel connected to. So I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be our show guest today. And I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network. Our guest today is Diane Budd. Her book is Energy Medicine for Animals, The Bioenergetics of Animal Healing. So thank you so much for being our guest, Diane.
Only a pleasure. It was a delight.
Also, how do people get in touch with you? What's the easiest place to find you?
They can just go onto the website, which is www.healinganimals.co.za.
Okay, and that link will be actually a live link from our archived show, so anybody can visit anytime. So again, thank you so much for being our guest. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, right here on Progressive Radio Network. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamite, The Natural Nurse, along with our co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, reminding you to stay healthy.